live from the Radio Catskill Studios in Liberty, New York, this is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, New York has a new energy plan, but could it lock in higher energy bills for decades? We'll examine the new plan and what it means for your home and community with Natural Resources Defense Council, who says it misses the mark on renewables, affordability, and public health. Local economic perspective from James B. Huntington this Monday, and how one Catskills storefront is blending retail, coffee, and pop-up dining to build community. Plus, looking back at some of our favorite stories of 2025, this one from 1975, rare footage of the talking heads at CBGB. We'll have the story behind it after this hour's news from NPR.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Windsor Johnston. The Trump administration says the Coast Guard is pursuing an oil tanker linked to Venezuela. It's part of a broader U.S. effort to enforce sanctions on Venezuelan oil shipments, including tankers traveling to and from the country. NPR's Carrie Kahn is following the story from Rio de Janeiro.
One U.S. official who was not authorized to speak publicly did tell NPR the Coast Guard was, in quote, active pursuit of a ship. The official said that ship, the tanker, was, quote, a dark fleet vessel attempting to illegally evade sanctions. The official also stated that the tanker was flying a false flag and under a judicial seizure order.
That's NPR's Carrie Kahn reporting. Japan is set to restart the world's largest nuclear reactor. The decision comes 15 years after it was shut down following the Fukushima nuclear disaster. NPR's Anthony Kuhn reports the restart will move ahead despite residents' opposition.
The Kashiwazaki Kariwa plant sits on the Sea of Japan in Niigata Prefecture. It supplies electricity to the capital, Tokyo, about 136 miles to the southeast. Niigata's prefectural assembly passed a vote of confidence in the governor who supports the plant's restart, essentially green-lighting the move. From 2021 to 2023, Japan's nuclear regulators effectively banned the plant from restarting due to security breaches and falsified safety inspection records. An October poll found 61% of residents don't think conditions for the restart have been met, but the government plans to reactivate the plant's first reactor next month anyway. Anthony Kuhn, NPR News, Seoul.
The Trump administration is awarding five new contracts for construction of high-tech security walls along the U.S.-Mexico border. Jerry Clayton with Texas Public Radio reports these latest contracts involve sections of the border in Texas and Arizona.
The new contracts total $3.3 billion for the so-called smart wall, which relies on electronic surveillance and data sharing to detect and respond to border crossings. The smart walls also include secondary physical walls and water barriers in some areas. The projects include one in the Del Rio sector, three in the Laredo sector, and one in Tucson, Arizona. The Trump administration has committed a total of $8 billion towards the Smart Wall project, a key component of Trump's border security strategy. Democratic Senator Henry Cuellar, who represents Laredo, was critical of the plans and called the walls 14th-century solutions to 21st-century problems. I'm Jerry Clayton in San Antonio.
Stocks are trading higher on Wall Street at this hour. The Dow Jones Industrial Average is up 131 points. The Nasdaq Composite also trading higher, up 133. The S&P 500 up 32 points. This is NPR News. A massive power outage left large parts of San Francisco in the dark this weekend, cutting electricity to about 130,000 customers. Officials say some of the outages were caused by a fire that broke out at a PG&E substation. The blackout darkened much of the city's north side, including areas around Golden Gate Park, before spreading to other neighborhoods. As people prepare for the holidays, most feel like prices are higher than usual, and many say it's harder to afford the things they want to get. NPR's Amy Held reports on how shoppers are adapting.
Dipping into savings, scouring for deals, and resisting pricey purchases. Just a few of the ways people are adjusting this holiday season, according to a new AP NORC poll, as more than half say it's harder to afford the gifts they want to give. High schooler Emerson Gates says school festivities are pared down this year.
I have the same budget that I would usually have, and I got, like, way less items.
Americans' outlook is dim about the overall economy and jobs, but as NPR polling finds, by far the biggest financial factor straining Americans right now is prices, up 2.7% from a year ago. They're belt-tightening so they can still play Santa, even as 7 in 10 Americans say they're barely able to pay their bills. Amy Held, NPR News.
The Powerball jackpot now stands at an estimated $1.6 billion, making it one of the largest lottery prizes in U.S. history. No ticket matched all six winning numbers on Saturday. The next drawing is tonight. This is NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include the Doris Duke Foundation, which aims to support the well-being of people and the planet for a more creative, equitable, and sustainable future. And listeners like you who donate to this NPR station.
Welcome back to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for joining us. New York State has just adopted a new energy plan, but some environmental advocates say it falls short at a critical moment as energy bills rise and climate risks grow. Natural Resources Defense Council argues the plan fails to prioritize proven cost-effective solutions like energy efficiency and renewable power, and instead leaves the door open to increased fossil fuel investment. Joining us now to break down what the plan means for New Yorkers and what NRDC says the state should do next is Chris Casey, Utility Regulatory Director for New York at Natural Resources Defense Council. Chris, thanks for being here.
So happy to be here today.
In plain terms, what's NRDC's biggest concern with what Albany approved with this new energy plan?
Well, at a time when New Yorkers are facing higher bills and growing reliability and health risks, this plan fails to lean into the most effective, lowest cost solutions available, like energy efficiency, renewable energy, and clean technologies that enable electrification of end uses. And really most concerning is that the plan opens the door to increased fossil dependence and other high-cost, speculative approaches. And so we think the failure of leadership with this plan risks locking New Yorkers into higher and more volatile energy costs potentially for decades to come.
As you mentioned, New Yorkers are already feeling high energy bills. How does this plan risk making costs worse, not better, over time?
Well, New Yorkers are facing higher bills, not just their energy bills. And, you know, I think it should be noted that energy bills are, you know, I think for many New Yorkers, not kind of the biggest strain compared to several years ago. I mean, many New Yorkers are seeing their rents shoot up. They're seeing the price of groceries go through the roof. But we're seeing similar trends, even if not as dramatic increases in our energy costs as well. And, you know, this plan, you know, it is making it's kind of opening the door to investments and approaches that will, in the long run, take us to a more high cost and volatile energy system. There's a bit of a trade-off in the clean energy transition. We know from study after study after study that the lowest cost, highest value, most affordable energy system is one that really leans into renewable energy and the electrification of everything, as well as into energy efficiency and kind of flexible demand, the ability to kind of shift when energy is being used. And but this requires some upfront capital investment to And, you know, it, those upfront capital investments, you know, have a near-term cost that enable big benefits over time. And so the more we don't lean into that clean energy future, we are locking ourselves into a higher cost, more unstable future over time. And so what we should be seeing the government do is lean into those clean technologies, into renewables, and find innovative ways to make sure that those costs are not, you know, overly burdening the people today, so that we can have the best system kind of both today and in the future.
And in approving this plan last week, Governor Kathy Hochul sort of has embraced this all of the above energy strategy that includes continued reliance on natural gas. But the state is arguing fossil fuel infrastructure can improve reliability. Why does NRDC say that approach is risky or unnecessary?
Well, you know, there's a lot of talk about all of the above, but in reality, what we see is that is often just a door for opening. It's opening the door to continued fossil dependence, and it's a way to justify new investments in fossil infrastructure that will need to be paid off over the lifetime of that infrastructure, which is often many, many decades. And is often much longer than that infrastructure will be used. And so it's really setting us up for stranded costs. It's laying the ground for higher rates. And it's not necessary to enable the reliability that they seek. New York already has one of the most reliable systems in the entire country. And this is especially true for downstate, where we plan to the highest reliability standards in the nation. And so, you know, oftentimes the discussion of reliability is a lot of kind of flag waving as a way to justify you know, certain types of investments.
What does continued fossil fuel dependence mean for air quality and public health?
It means the air we breathe will be dirtier, that we will be continuing to drive climate change, and really it's that public health aspect that is where so much of the value of the clean energy transition lies. You know, there are, you know, increased hospitalizations and deaths because people are breathing, you know, dirty air in this country and in the state. And we can make huge differences to relieve that through electrifying end uses, whether it's you know, transportation, whether it's the appliances in people's homes, or if it's the power plants that are powering our grid.
NRDC is also urging the state to move forward with a cap and invest program. How would that work, and what would it mean for everyday households?
And invest is one of these innovative strategies that could make an enormous difference throughout our entire economy. And it does that by putting a price on pollution and using the revenues that are raised by putting a price on pollution to offset people's electricity bills, so to provide them bill credits so that their electricity bills go down, and And then it also creates funds to invest in technologies and infrastructure that will continue to drive a cleaner, safer energy system. And not only does, and it's important that, you know, not only is it raising money that can be used to help offset electricity bills and to make clean energy investments, but in doing that and putting a price on pollution and then, you know, helping lower the cost of electricity, it also sends economic signals around the choices that are, you know, most in the public interest, that provide us the most value. And so it helps align kind of everyday decisions of people and business, which with what is has the highest value for society. And right now we are, you know, our economy is not aligned in that way. It's aligned in a way that, you know, funnels money off into, you know, some of the biggest polluters.
Energy efficiency, renewable energy, certainly something that you're advocating for. But in the at the federal level, and as you mentioned, the backdrop here of what folks who are looking to get more renewables, you've got an Interior Department and administration that is opposed to a lot of these renewables. In fact, today, according to the New York Times, the Trump administration said it would pause leases for 5 wind farms under construction off the East Coast. And it just leaves a couple of wind farms in U.S. coastal waters. Do you think that this energy plan from New York is a missed opportunity to protect New Yorkers from these federal environmental rollbacks like this?
Oh, certainly. And, you know, in many ways, it's, you know, capitulating to the to these federal policymakers who are doing things day in and day out that are making everybody's lives more expensive, more unaffordable, and just, you know, more difficult to make the investments we need to, you know, power our society for decades to come. But I want to make clear that the policies at the federal level are they're making everything more expensive. You know, so they're certainly putting lots of roadblocks and trying to attack clean energy, but their policies are impacting our energy system writ large. It is, you know, it now, even if you wanted to buy, you know, to build a natural gas power plant, for example, you'd have to wait, you know, 7+ years to do so because you can't get the equipment. I mean, their policies are kind of scrambling supply chains and international trade. Their tariff policies are increasing, you know, the cost of goods and services, and they are, you know, increasingly, you know, pushing not just New York but other places to, you know, have higher costs and making it harder to make the investments we need to power our society.
Now that New York has adopted this new energy plan, what leverage does the public still have to push the state in a different direction?
Well, you know, this plan, it has lots of, there are positive things in here, and there are lots of things that could open the door to technologies and solutions that, you know, kind of might be politically convenient for policymakers, but are not in New Yorkers' long-term interest. And so, you know, really this plan that's supposed to guide, state agency decisions and policymaking, you know, really leaves a tremendous amount of discretion. And so we need people to let their, to fight for the solutions that will kind of put us on the best, highest value, most affordable path. And so we got to let our, whether it's our, representatives at the state level, the local level, certainly the Public Service Commission that makes decisions about electric and natural gas utilities. We have to let them know that we want a healthy and affordable future, one that's powered by clean energy, and we have to fight to make that happen and let them know that it's important to us.
Heading into 2026, and as legislators reconvene at the beginning of the year in Albany, what's the one thing that folks should be paying attention to next when it comes to climate and environment and affordability?
Well, we should certainly be looking to the governor for several important things. One, there was recently a lawsuit that found that the state has violated the climate law by not enacting regulations to implement the climate law and drive the clean energy transition that is required by statute in this state. She has appealed that decision, and she has put a pause on implementing cap and invest. So that's, I think, something to look out for and to push her on. And we should remember, too, that this is this is a year that she's going to be running for governor. And so we should be paying a lot of attention to what she says about energy and the environment. And we should be holding her accountable to do things that put us on the best path forward.
That's Chris Casey, Utility Regulatory Director for New York at Natural Resources Defense Council. There's more information at nrdc.org. Chris, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
We'll take a break, and when we come back, local economic perspective from James B. Huntington. This is Radio Chatskill.
An estimated 15,000 U.S. churches across denominations will close during the next several years.
After-school tutoring programs, backpack drives, Alcoholics Anonymous meetings. Like, where is all this stuff going to go?
What happens to a community at large when their churches close? That's on the next On Point.
Monday morning at 11 on Radio Catskill.
Since 1770, musicians of historic Trinity Church have inspired concertgoers with their interpretation of Handel's oratorio Messiah. It wouldn't be Christmas time without it. Hear this holiday favorite sung by the choir of Trinity Church and played on period instruments under the direction of Andrew McGill. Handel's Messiah from Trinity Church.
Christmas Day at midnight on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno, and it's time to check in with our local economist and author, James B. Huntington. Working 9 to 5. For some local economic perspective this Monday. James B., thanks for being here.
Good morning, Tim. Good morning, listeners.
All right. Well, let's dive in and talk about last week's jobs report. What happened there?
Yes, a reasonably current one for the first time in 3 months. And was it worth waiting for? Well, it depends what you were looking for. We got 64,000 net new non-farm payroll positions, which is hardly nothing, and it was more than the estimate, but it's lower than we were used to for a couple years recently. 4.3% for seasonally adjusted unemployment still, but up 0.2% for adjusted unemployment to 4.6%. Unadjusted unemployed up 200,000 to 7.8 million. We had 1.9 million of them were out for 27 weeks or longer. That's up 100,000. Labor force participation rate up 0.1% to 62.5%, but the employment population ratio dropped the same amount to 59.6%. Payroll earnings grew 19 cents. That's private non-farm. That's less than inflation, actually, since it was for 2 months, now 36.86. The really disturbing thing that happened out of nowhere was they track people who are working part-time for economic reasons or keeping less than full-time jobs while looking so far unsuccessfully for full-time ones. That soared 900,000 to 5.5 million. That's a whale of a lot. And we're hoping that data is some kind of aberration and it goes back to normal next time. The AJSN or American Job Shortage number was up about 110,000 to just over 17 million. So overall, we had a few good things and a few more bad things. So we don't like the rising unemployment rate. We don't like that problem with the working part-time for economic reasons. We don't know anything about what the October results were, but this month was no progress at all.
And we also got some data for our listening area. What were the latest unemployment figures for the area?
Yes, these are from September. They just came out. So Sullivan County, 3.6%. That's down 0.1% from August. Orange, 4.2%, also down 0.1%. Ulster County, 3.8%, down 0.2%. Wayne County, 3.9%, down 0.4%. And Pike County, 4.7%, down 0.1%. Now, the national rate went down 0.2%, but it still came in at 4.3%, which is higher than four of the five counties in our listening area. So we're still doing well around here. We're still doing very satisfyingly, despite not having a big city in our area or any one big place that stepped up hiring greatly or anything like that. It's just overall seems to be quite well managed and doing the job for us in jobs around here.
Good to hear in the area. At a national level, we got the Consumer Price Index data last week. What does that look like, especially in light of President Trump in his national address saying he's bringing prices down? What does the consumer price data show?
Well, he's not bringing prices down, but it's down. The inflation rate was down this time to 2.7 annual percent, which is quite a bit better. They were predicting the economists 3.1%. Core inflation was only 2.6%, even lower than that. There is considerable concern that there may have been some distortion caused by the government shutdown. So really, we have to say it looks good, but we won't know really until we see December's data.
All right. We'll keep an eye on that. We know you will be. We've talked a lot about scams and fraud here, especially with its impact on seniors. And you have some data on how much older Americans lost to fraud in the last year.
Yes, this is a report by the FTC, the Federal Trade Commission, saying that in 2024, the most recent year they have, there were officially and reported about $2.4 billion lost for people 60 and older to scams that year, and that's quadruple what it was 4 years before. So these things are getting more and more common. Now, the real point is that these things are all underreported, maybe massively so. So the estimates they have of the actual number was between 10.1 billion, or over four times that number, and 81.5 billion. It says, depending on methodology, that last one seems awfully high, that that would call for only, what is it, 1/30th or something of these things being aired officially. So that seems doubtful to me, but they are naming that as a possibility here. So mainly the most common place for these things to be happening is online, right, in various sites. There people are getting attracted by emails and websites and such things, although the phone ones tend to be bigger. So it seems to be a growing problem no matter what the numbers are. So what we have, especially what we're seeing, is social media and tech support, sweepstakes, lottery, the old saw, you've won $1 million, send us $50 so we can send you your information or whatever, and that's the last you see of the $50. And yeah, $744 million in being lost in investment schemes. Don't do your investments based on someone contacting you about a specific thing. Go back and look things over and figure out. They don't need you desperately and immediately. An unexpected contact, a surge of emotion, and a sense of urgency are the red flags, the things you can notice here. And be careful about AI imitations of loved ones' voices and such. But generally, there are a lot of things that you should be initiating, and your investment choices are one of them. If someone says so-and-so is a great deal, say, fine, I'll look into it. And then look into it. Mm-hmm. And if it seems thoroughly legitimate and they have a good case, you still have to wonder why they contacted you. They don't need your money in particular, but you. So most of these things will just boil right off if you just step back and investigate it and take your normal time and do your due diligence. Yep. And that goes for all of these things.
If it's too good to be true, it probably
yes,
is.
Yes, yes, yes.
Now, some banks are stepping up to help folks suffering from financial hardship, and local banks especially. What are they doing and why?
Well, there's not really much new here as far as they'll help you to save, to manage everyday financial transactions, and to build a banking relationship that can lead to affordable credit. They also provide fraud and loss protection. It's harder to get through a bank if you're at an account and someone's trying to take money out of your account because they are the professionals at avoiding being scammed. So we have 4.2% of the households in the country now are unbanked, or as of 2023, rather. That means they have no bank account of any kind at a bank or credit union, no checking or savings account. Most of them are cash only, and they also use prepaid cards and such things. If they're underbanked, that's another 14% of people who have the account, but they still use non-bank products for most of these things, which can cost a lot more money. One of the advantages of doing it straightforward from a bank are they can work with people if they're having problems of such sort and give them things. If you get an overdraft fee, if they start denying you accounts, you can talk with them and you may be able to get an account after a while if you're talking to a real human being. And the people, there are a lot of people who are from other countries and they're sending money back home, but it's often a lot cheaper to deal with a bank to do it that way instead of going to Western Union or one of these other companies. Mm-hmm. So that's an advantage. So it's a solid thing, and you really should. Anyone should really have a bank account of some sort, especially the savings accounts don't cost you anything. You just have it. You put in often a very modest amount of money, and you have the account and you're making contact, and if you need some kind of help, if you may need a loan or something, that can look back on your history years later and see that you've been behaving yourself and everything is consistent with that. And it's worth doing. If you're, you know, if you see yourself there, then really think about walking into a bank and getting at least a savings account.
All right, let's take a look at the numbers and see how things changed across the board in the last week and from this morning.
Yes, absolutely. We have this morning, as of this morning, 1 week numbers, gold $44.14, up $72. That's $200 the past 2 weeks.
Wow.
Silver $69.04, another over $5 in a week. That's a tremendous amount. I mean, I was dealing with silver things when the value of it was less than $5.42, what it went up this week. We're just going up into the wild blue yonder. The ratio between gold and silver is now 64-1 and ever shrinking, even though gold is setting records. Silver is going up so much more, but wow, we may have that C-note silver within a couple months of the way it's going, or not. No guarantees. I don't really know what's driving it to this extent, but it looks awfully good. Dow Jones Industrial Average, 48,135. That's down 323, a slight down week, but less than last week's gain. It's still higher than it was 2 weeks ago. NASDAQ, 23,308. That's up 113, slightly up for a, that makes it a mixed stock market week, really. Oil, West Texas Intermediate, 57.04, the 42-gallon barrel, down 45 cents. It's looking awfully good at the pumps. It's really consistently below $3, maybe not in Pennsylvania where the taxes are higher, but it's awfully close, and it seems like they're staying there, and it's, instead of jumping way down, requiring time for the prices to catch up, it's creeping down, which is awfully good. Bitcoin, 89,617, down 263. That's as good as a break even with Bitcoin's volatility. 263 isn't even an average daily swing. British pound, 1.3429. That's up 37 hundredths of a cent. That's up a penny in 2 weeks and 3 cents the past month. Something is happening there. Euro, 1.1732, down 9 hundredths of a cent, but still really quite robust. This is the kind of rate the euro people have wanted to have. And the Japanese 100 yen fell back to a penny to its normal home of 64 cents. So the beat goes on. It's looking like it's going to be an awfully strong 2025. I'll get you a summary on what happened over the year.
We'll hear from you about that next week. James B. Huntington, local economist and author with the Local Economic Perspective. Have a happy Christmas.
You too. Thank you, Tim. Thank you, listeners.
We'll take a break, and when we come back, a small Catskills storefront mixing retail, food, and community. We got the details ahead here on Radio Chatskill.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from the Narrowsburg Union and Catskills Curated, presenting products of regional artists, artisans, makers, and craftsmen. Gift wrapping and shipping available on site. NarrowsburgUnion.com. The Cooperage Project in Honesdale. Dedicated to building community through performance, learning, markets, and good times. TheCooperageProject.org. And from listeners like you who donate at WJFFradio.org.
I'm Sabrina Artel. Join me for conversations with all kinds of people in the studio, on the street, and the kitchen table of my vintage travel trailer. That's Trailer Talk, Monday night at 7:30 on Radio Catskill.
You're listening to Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. In Hancock, New York, a small storefront is carving out a big role in the local food and arts scene. All Sorts, a gift shop and cafe, has become a gathering place for residents and visitors by combining retail, coffee, and rotating food pop-ups that showcase regional chefs and makers. All Sorts is the subject of Eating Upstate today with Aaron Shear.
I'm not sure why, like, everyone calls it a hidden gem. And I'm like, it's not hidden, but I guess it's like a little bit off the beaten path. But Instagram has definitely like, that is, I think, like how we're in business, just because of like people discovering us online. And even like Brooklyn customers and clients who have houses up here or vacation up here that have kind of followed along with our journey. I just think it's getting them in the door. Like a lot of people don't even know that I'm here, and I'll meet people that work in town that didn't even know there was a coffee shop in town. So I find that kind of confusing, but I think it's because like out of towners, they're typing in their map, like coffee or lunch or gifts. And they're looking for something to stop at. Whereas people who work and maybe are in their routine don't realize, like they don't walk. Like Hancock, I find it very walkable, but because there aren't that many open storefronts, people aren't necessarily like walking up and down the block.
That's Hannah Bonaguro describing the slow burn success of her store All Sorts, located in Hancock. All Sorts began as a store devoted to selling vintage items and provisions, but has since expanded to include coffee, baked goods, and cakes. It also hosts pop-up dinners as well as the occasional dinner service. This month, it celebrates its third anniversary. Bonaguro and All Sorts is the subject of today's Eating Upstate. Hannah Bonaguro grew up in northern New Jersey. After graduating from Simon's Rock College in the Berkshires, she spent the next 15 years working in New York City as a barista, a cafe manager, as well as working in vintage stores, and sometimes working as a cafe manager in a vintage store. She also hosted a Sunday night supper club that served vegetarian dishes. During the pandemic, she opened Your Other Left Ear, located in Fort Greene, Brooklyn.
So we opened a pop-up and it was primarily vintage. There was no food component at all. And that was running. I was part of that for about 3 years. But during that time, we opened All Sorts and kind of added another state outpost. And then we added the cafe stuff back in. So kind of like went from food industry, like, and then just retail to now back to like retail and hospitality and food again. Yeah. For a while there was overlap and I was back and forth from the city trying to get this going on the weekends and working in the city all week. But Your Other Left Ear was my original store, project space turned retail store. And now it's like absorbed by All Sorts.
Even before the pandemic, Bonaguro had an interest in relocating to the Catskills. In 2022, she rented an apartment in Hancock and opened All Sorts in December of that year. For a while, Bonaguro operated both All Sorts and Your Other Left Ear simultaneously.
I think it happened a little like faster than I expected, but I was like glad to go with that. So like when we opened it, we just didn't know it'd be such a food place. And it was, it just became clear that that's what was needed and that I would need to be here more days than just like Friday through Sunday. And then I still did both for a while. I didn't have to be at the Brooklyn shop all the time. It was like, I would go down twice a month. And then ultimately I phased that out to just focus on All Sorts. I still have a big like following and people are still on that website ordering stuff. So I've now combined the websites. It's almost like Your Other Left Ear has just been absorbed by All Sorts.
All Sorts conducted its first pop-up in May of 2023 when they hosted a pizza pop-up on the weekends. This year, they hosted pop-ups by Outer Space, a pop-up kitchen devoted to Iranian cuisine with a Texan twist, and the Casa Masa Project, a pop-up hosted by Bethel resident Mercedes Goleep.
I mean, I have mutuals with like Mercedes as well as Layla, so they kind of knew about All Sorts. And Mercedes from Casa Masa Project, she reached out to me and asked if she could do the 4th of July weekend at All Sorts. So we spearheaded that together. That was my only pop up in the summer, it turned out, just because we were open like 6 days a week. So we just, it was just hard to do dinner pop ups. And hers was, it was great, but it was just like a lot. And I wanted to have the store like now at this point in time, It more easily adapts into a dinner spot at night because I've like made more space and cleared the areas more. Whereas in the summer, I still had a lot of retail in the shop and it was harder to turn over from like day to night service. But hers was amazing as far as like the food and the turnout. And it was in the summer, so we had outdoor seating actually. And then Layla and her partner Rand came to All Sorts, like I think it was last spring, and introduced themselves and said they wanted to do a sandwich pop-up. So then Layla ended up doing Saturday, Sunday's lunch, which was a little easier to, we had her in the kitchen doing breakfast and lunch sandwiches and bowls. And that became like a consistent thing where we worked together and she helped me up front whenever I needed help with the cafe, which was pretty often.
Mercedes Goleap's The Casa Masa Project offers an interpretation of Venezuelan cuisine utilizing local ingredients. She relocated from New York City to Bethel in 2021 with the hopes of making more connections with the Catskills farming community. This past 4th of July weekend, Goleap hosted a Casa Masa Project pop-up at All Sorts. Here she shares with me why she chose All Sorts to host her pop-up.
She wanted to have a series of pop-ups with different chefs from the area. And so we agreed on a date. And I had been at All Sorts before, but as a customer. And I found that place super charming. And just the vibes of like, it feels like a living room. And you are surrounded by art and cookbooks and baked goods, and just Hannah's personality is also like super warm and cozy. So immediately when she mentioned that idea, I was absolutely on board. And it was a really good collaboration in the sense that I was able to, like, Hannah and I share the same ethos about like slow, local, handmade, reuse, recycle, like all of that stuff. So I was immediately in love with like all the farmers that like she sources the food from. I think I sourced most of it from her marketplace. And it was just like a natural and organic collaboration in a way. Like I felt very welcome at like, it was like cooking at Hannah's home.
All Sorts sources their coffee from Rock Royal Farm in Walton and Big Mouth Coffee Roasters in Beacon. They source their tea from Tay Tea in Delhi and their meat from Catskill Smokehouse, also located in Delhi. For dinner services and pop-ups, they serve beer from Upward Brewing Company in Livingston Manor, wine from Behemoth, a winery located in the Finger Lakes in the town of Burdett, located in Schuyler County, as well as Dear Native Grapes, a winery based in Walton that was profiled by Eating Upstate in 2023. During the warmer months, All Sorts also host CSA and produce pickups from 607 CSA.
People can sign up for shares and pick up weekly, or they can just order a la carte, like someone could order like butter and bacon and a loaf of bread. It's a little tricky because their pickup day is Tuesday. So like weekenders and people that aren't always here, like leave stuff with me until Thursday or Friday. But yeah, we do weekly shares, but then you can also just order whatever from, they work with so many different producers. So I've been getting that going more where people will order like yogurt or butter through the CSA.
Going forward, Bonaguro hopes to obtain a beer and liquor license to make it easier to host dinner service and other evening events. She also hopes to hire more help. Outside of All Sorts, you can see Bonaguro is an extra in the new movie Marty Supreme, scheduled to be released on Christmas Day.
Yeah, no, it's something I've actually been interested in from the start, but without having like the infrastructure with like staff and a fully built out kitchen, it's been just me kind of building it and incorporating food more and more and doing pop-ups to see how they go. And we had another one last night and they seem to get better and better as far as turnout and people understanding like what it's about and what to expect. And I really like having the booze component. I think it's really nice to have like an evening place to gather, but it is kind of like a big leap where I would want to make sure I had regular like staff and cooks to actually accommodate having like evening food. I don't want to just serve what I serve at the cafe during the day at night, beer and wine. I want there to be, I have all the menus drawn out, but I would really want to take it to the next level and become a dinner spot. And I just don't, I just didn't want to bite off more than I could chew. And I'm in year three now. And I'm like, I think in the new year, this is what we're going to try to do. Yeah, that's new news. Cat's out of the bag. Yeah, we did like the casting. The casting director asked me to help cast people in Hancock, and a bunch of us ended up in it. And I was a little surprised to see, my friend saw that I was in the trailer and texted me. So I'm excited to see that. It comes out on Christmas.
All Sorts is located at 169 East Front Street in Hancock. I'm Erin Shear. Eating Upstate is a production of WJFF Radio Catskill.
And thank you, Erin. And we're looking back on some of our favorite stories of the year. If you knew punk rock or new wave in the 70s and 80s, you knew CBGB's, the legendary East Village Club, where bands like the Ramones, Blondie, and Talking Heads first made their mark. Back in August of this year, never before seen footage of Talking Heads performing at CBGB in 1979 was screened in Ellenville. It was captured by Metropolis Video, and Radio Catskill's Genevieve Hartnett spoke with John Hazard of Metropolis Video about the theatrical edge of Talking Heads and how collaboration fueled the rise of emerging artists.
It was 1975 in the East Village in New York City. A group of young filmmakers, who called themselves Metropolis Video, were cutting their teeth shooting punk rock and new wave bands at the CBGB nightclub. And one of them was an NYU film student named John Hazard.
With a name like mine, you could say I know enough to be dangerous about a lot of things.
That was John. Using borrowed film equipment, John and Metropolis Video worked to bring the eclectic music scene of the village to all on public access television. It's safe to say we might have no record of the early work of Blondie or the Talking Heads without John and his team.
The people I hooked up with, who were essentially were the Metropolis Video folks, I got brought in because of my camera skills. And I knew the woman who was a part of Metropolis Video. Her name's Pat Ivers. She's got a whole story herself. And so essentially, these people that I have remain connected to through all this video work were active as former students. They were really actually working and volunteering at Sterling Manhattan Cable TV. And they were the ones who were distributing and making available portable video equipment through the public access channel. That was the whole idea, is that anybody could walk in off the streets and use what was at that moment brand new portable video technology. And so that was what my friends in Metropolis were focused on. They were doing public access. And once they got down to CB's and saw what was happening, they thought, there's no live music. Why don't we do live music? And had a weekly television show on public access, Saturday night at midnight, live from CBGB. And we showed all the video that we were making in those days.
But Hazard notes that as soon as the Talking Heads came into CBGB and started working with Metropolis, his artistry and craft as a videographer was pushed to new heights.
You talked about how the Talking Heads, you worked specifically with them and they were really interested in public access of their music. Can you talk a little bit more about what their ideas were, what they worked with you on? What were they particularly passionate about in working with you?
More than any other of the bands that we filmed, Talking Heads wanted to see what we were doing, and they had input. So basically, when David Byrne saw the way that we had filmed the thing and were inspired by the music and were thinking of it experimental cinema ourselves, wanted to express the video in a way that mirrored the music that we were hearing, then that's what the first set that I'm going to show demonstrates. David actually said, well, I would prefer it if you treated us like a football game and don't do any of these kinds of dissolves and special shots. Just have straight frames of us playing.
I got the chance to listen to one of the recordings ahead of the event.
The name of our group is Talking Heads. And the first song we'd like to do is called The Girls Want to Be with the Girls. Just don't want to play like that. Just want to talk to the boys. Just want to do what's in their hearts. And the girls want to be with the girls. And the boys say, what do you mean? The boys say, what do you mean?
We came in for a second shoot and a third shoot. We figured out we could add some light. That moment, the next generation of portable video cameras suddenly appeared. So on the second shoot with the Talking Heads, we showed up with better cameras and better lighting. And we even mounted a full master shot camera from the ceiling. And, you know, what I find really interesting about that is to have seen them develop and seeing David Byrne's career such that by the time you get to Stop Making Sense, which I just think of as the go-to live performance film, and you see the design element of that and the way that he builds that film working with Jonathan Demme. He's a consummate showman, and he thinks about theater, and he thinks about live music. And he was always able to carry that aesthetic forward.
The ways we shoot, produce, and consume music have changed drastically since John and Metropolis Video were working with artists in the Village in the mid-1970s. And while CBGB closed in 2006, Hazard hopes that this live footage reminds folks that developing artists of all types should be given the opportunity to grow.
CBGB's Embodied in the Moment was a place for musicians who couldn't get booked anywhere else, who had their own style of songs, who just had new material. They were not cover bands. And the owner decided to let them come and play. I mean, CBGB is something representing country bluegrass. But one of the musicians, as I read about it, persuaded the owner to start booking these independent groups that were just sort of around at that moment. The term punk rock hadn't been invented. It came along right in that era. And a magazine called Punk showed up. And there was just a sense, especially on the Lower East Side, that this was a pretty feral moment, but you could really experience something that was unique and matched the mood of the city.
In Liberty, I'm Genevieve Hartnett for Radio Catskill.
And thanks to Genevieve for that. And one of our favorite stories of 2025. We'll be looking back over the next couple of weeks at some of our favorites. In the meantime, that's going to do it for this edition of Radio Catskill. And we hope you may find yourself here with us again tomorrow. I'm Tim Bruno. Thanks for listening.
Support for Radio Catskill comes from Dog Mountain Lodge, providing dog boarding and grooming, also boarding cats, birds, and other exotic pets. Located in Coshecton, New York, and on the web at dogmountainlodge.com. And from North American Cultural Laboratory, Highland Lake, New York, an experimental workspace for performing artists and inquisitive audiences, creating a space for community celebration throughout the year, nacl.org. And from listeners like you.
Hey, it's Jason Dole letting you know how you can help nourish our neighbors. More families are struggling to put food on the table. Local food pantries are stepping up, but they need help. You can donate non-perishable food, personal care items, or baby supplies, or volunteer to assist with distribution. It can make a real difference. Learn more at WJFFradio.org to help make sure everyone in our community has enough to eat. Radio Catskill, keeping our neighbors connected.
WJFF Jeffersonville, streaming live at WJFFradio.org. This is Radio Catskill, local news, culture, and NPR. This morning, breezy, but then partly sunny this afternoon, high 33. We're keeping an eye on some snow, rain mixed at times from late tonight into tomorrow. It could total 1 to 3 inches. Tonight's low 27, tomorrow's high 35.